the topic for our topic for today, April 19th, is Spirit, Spirits, and Spirituality. But before we begin, it's our custom to familiarize you with the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which you can pick up in the front as you go out. Now, first, we'd like to tell you that it's financially maintained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings. In time and work, all are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So before we begin, can't hear me, just raise your hand. We will read this Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And as I stated before, our purpose is to spread, broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. On the back, of this little yellow pamphlet, you will see the Declaration clearly lined out. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a true realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race or creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to the association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. For the true theosophers really belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Briefly, that is the Declaration, and briefly we'll give some highlights on the program. As we stated this morning, this is Sunday, April the 19th, and the topic today will be Spirit, Spirits, and Spirituality. As you see, we began promptly at 11 a.m. and will be done by noon, but the doors are open 10:30 so that you can come in. On weekdays, Wednesday night, that's the study class. The doors open at 5:30.
15, rather.
This is a new schedule. We're so used to 5:30, 6:30. But keep that in mind. We start a little earlier and we're out earlier. In other words, the class begins promptly at 7:30, and it only takes an hour. 8:30 we're finished and we leave. But you can get into the library, as was stated, line 15. And there you will find straight line theosophical literature, books, and so forth. And a volunteer to introduce you not only to what's in the library, but to show you the foyer and even look within the auditorium and what's going on that particular night. Please note, there will be a special meeting Wednesday, May 6th. It's called White Lotus Day. All of us look forward to that day when we commemorate H.P. Blavatsky and her work. We think we covered everything in that particular announcement, but make sure you pick one of these up. We always, in the beginning, carried it in our pockets everywhere, riding buses or whatever, so you can take it with you. Before we begin today, there's this reading, which we will read to you. It's called The Spirit in the Body. It's by Robert Crosby, letter 9. No one can clear another's sight. Words, oceans of them, will not convey these ideas without a gradual leading on and a determined effort to comprehend. On the one hand, it is so simple that it is passed over in favor of a difficulty. On the other, our mode of thinking is based on separateness. Oh, where is the sea? The fishes cried, oh, where is the sea? As they swam in the brimming tide. Judge speaks of the great illusion produced by nature in causing us to see objects as different from spirit. And in the Gita, as a single sun illuminated the whole world, even so doth the one spirit illumine every body. If this means anything, it means that in everybody there is the one spirit, the perceiver, the knower, the experiencer. It is we ourselves who are creating the phantasmagoria before our eyes and struggling over the solution of its disturbing effects. As every law is spiritual, so all forms and things, forces and aspects must also be spiritual. All error springs from an effort to turn to small purposes the diversified streams of spiritual force. Spirit in the Body by Robert Crosby.
We'd like to stress that last sentence from the reading. As every law is spiritual, so all forms, things, forces, and aspects must also be spiritual. That really is the theme of theosophy and the theme of this presentation this morning. However, another wonderful line in there is words, oceans of them, will not convey these ideas. And yet, here we are. What else do we have? We need words to express ideas so we can try to understand them, to make them a part of our actual use, thus turning them into wisdom. So we have no choice but to go with words and ideas. So obviously, the first place we have to start is the dictionary. And when it comes to these terms, it's truly startling to a student of the higher wisdom, the definitions that are out there. First, spirit, you look it up in the dictionary, and as a verb, you find it can relate to criminal activity. as in stolen cows were spirited away some distance. That is ridiculous, isn't it? And we didn't make that up. It's out there online in the dictionary. If we turn to it as a noun, we do much better. The definition is the non-physical part of a person that is the seat of emotions and character. In other words, spirit is the soul, psyche, the inner self, the inner being. Now that sounds much better, doesn't it? But philosophically, it's absolutely incorrect. It is wrong. Is it any wonder that we're confused and that we do not live up to the potential of spirituality? We don't even know what spirit is. We turn to the Theosophical Glossary, and you have to laugh out loud. You look up spirit, and this is what you read. The lack of any mutual agreement between writers in the use of this word has resulted in dire confusion. It is commonly made synonymous with soul, and the lexicographers countenance the usage of it. In Theosophical teachings, the term spirit is applied solely to that which belongs to universal consciousness. Soul is an expression, a temporary expression of spirit. And spirit is a temporary manifestation of an absolute principle. Philosophically, it's the monad. Spirit and matter are one, like the two sides of the hand. You can't have consciousness in expression without a form that it can use for that expression. But that is universal and is present in everything. The furniture in this room, the air in this room, the planet itself is no less spiritual than the highest being we can imagine. All is soul and spirit, ever evolving. Spirit is the universal, the be-ness aspect. Soul is the being or the becoming, the thinker, the perceiver in evolution. So we're reminded that spirit is formless, but the consciousness, the perceiver, needs a form to work through. Continuing in the glossary, spirit, in short, is no entity, but each individual may be described as a center of consciousness, a self-sentient and self-conscious center, a state, not a conditioned individual. And that is why in Sanskrit you have such a wealth of terms to describe any individual, depending on the state or level of their awareness and growth. But if we turn to the word spirits, we would like to pay as little attention as possible to it. We will mention it now and hope it doesn't come up again. The Theosophists reject the appellation spirits for those phantoms which appear in the phenomenal manifestations of the spiritualists, and call them instead shells and various other names. These other names are not very pleasant. Spooks, devils, demons. They are often the shells of suicides and executed criminals. It is not the spirit that is being received. But if we want to get to our, really the heart of this morning's subject, it's the spirituality. That's what matters to all of us. That's what we're struggling to understand and perhaps even to make real in our lives. And there is a wonderful ancient treatise called the Bhagavad Gita. And you cannot find anything better than the second chapter in the Bhagavad Gita for an introduction to spirit and yourself, and then what you're supposed to do about it. Of course, every devotional book does relate to this, but this one especially. In the second chapter, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. Those who are wise in spiritual things grieve neither for the dead nor the living. I myself never was not, nor thou, nor all the princes of the earth, nor shall we hereafter ever cease to be. These finite bodies, which envelop the souls inhabiting them, are said to belong to him, the eternal, the indestructible, unprovable spirit who is in the body. The man who believeth that this spirit killeth or can be killed is deceived, for it neither killeth nor it can be killed. Some regard the indwelling spirit as a wonder, while some speak and others hear of it with astonishment, but no one realizes it, although he may have heard it described. This spirit can never be destroyed in the mortal frame which it inhabiteth. This spirit can never be destroyed. Obviously, then, we're putting all of our focus on the wrong thing. And this is very, very true, that when it comes to a desire and a hunger to have a spiritual life, we immediately start working on the things in our personal nature that we think, well, need clearing up, get rid of this fault, and change this habit. And we think that's spiritual. But that isn't it. It is a complete reversal of why we are on earth, why we're in a physical body, why we have a personal nature. It isn't to perfect that. It's to use that as the means to express the true spiritual essence of all of us. If we could see, if we could rip away the veils that cover us from our own thinking and acting and feeling in the past, we would see there is no difference between ourselves and the highest being we imagine and the lowest being we imagine. We are one with all life. We are life. And as long as we behave as though we're something separate from each other, then we live in a delusional, unspiritual state. And yet, we are told over and over again that it really is so simple. Actually, that was in the reading too, wasn't it? About, it is we ourselves who are creating the phantasmagoria before our eyes and struggling over the solution of its disturbing effects. Because we are spirit, we are power. As we think and feel and act, we create our own universe, and then we have to work through it, live in it, face the results of it. And we run looking here and there for someone and something to fix it and solve it for us. But the whole time, we're not only the creator of it, we are the solution of the problem. So it is a change in focus from the material to the spiritual. But in order to do that, we do need words. We need ideas. And the teachings of Theosophy are said to be a portion of the ancient wisdom religion, something we as incarnating egos have dealt with before and we're returning to. So the job, the task, is to clean up our own perception and response to life, to difficulties, to individuals, to our own problems and unique circumstances, while at the same time trying to help anyone that we come in contact with to see and know that they are spiritual beings. So we're sure you have questions. We know we do. Yes.
Just that last term. What does it mean to be a spiritual being? And what is a spiritual being? Are we all spiritual beings?
I guess I didn't do a very good job from the beginning, if you have to ask that question. What is a spiritual being? Spirit is universal consciousness. So let's just start there. Consciousness. Am I conscious? Yes. Is a plant conscious? Yes. I mean, we know that. It turns towards the sun. It reacts. And okay, we have consciousness. Then what's the other thing that I have? The unique ability that the plant doesn't have. I mean, that plant could very well, for all we know, be thinking, I wish I could get out of here. I don't like being indoors. But it doesn't have the power of choice, thought, contrast. I do. You all do. The human stands in the unique place of spirit on the one side, matter on the other. Consciousness, personal. Universal, personal. I am a spiritual being. So is that plant. The plant cannot know it. Only the human can know it, and in knowing it, make use of it. Will it affect all other life? Absolutely, even that plant. That's the whole purpose of incarnation, is growth and learning, and then the blessing of that upon all of life. So what is a spiritual being? What isn't? Everything is. Everything is spirit in a form of one kind or another, whether we call it an atom or a gene. And more science is going, you know what? There's intelligence at work here. And there is. At the lowest level we can imagine, there is intelligence responding to circumstances and altering and making changes. They're discovering it in all kinds of ways. Now, maybe that doesn't answer your question, but what Theosophy would say is, it's up to you to answer it. Yes?
And along those lines, perhaps the question can be, how do we get to know and understand we are a spiritual being, and therefore change the way we are using this vehicle and influencing the vehicle?
How do we get to know that we are a spiritual being? What do you think? Yes.
Well, perhaps we don't say it for spiritual beings, but we're witnesses. We are witnesses to change. We see all this change. So apparently there's something that's witnessing this that's unchanging. So as said, it's consciousness. We just try to be aware of that, and then you become aware that this is just an instrument that you use. Just an instrument. There's something more to us than something.
Yes, just an instrument, but at the same time, it's pretty awesome. Have you ever seen that commercial where they show that you can see the light of a candle 3 football fields or something away? Well, that's incredible that your eye can do that. All of the things of this instrument are brilliant and wonderful. But that perception you're talking about is the realization that I am an individual, a thinker, a chooser. I stand in the center of myself, weighing and deciding, and can go in 2 different directions. That is an incredible power. And if you want to be, I don't know, challenged and amused by the use of this power, read the discourses of Epictetus. He will make you laugh out loud. Sometimes he's like throwing cold water in your face and saying, oh, grow up, come on. You know that it's your own fault. You know that you are making choices that lead to difficulties, and then you complain that you have difficulties. So the consciousness is if we center there and realize that that is changeless, how many have ever gone backwards and thought, okay, how did I think and feel? Besides the differences in physicality, how did I feel? How was I desirous of things when I was 12? What about 20? What about 30? What's the only constant between those things? Because most of us changed our minds, opinions, and feelings many times in those stages. The only constant is I was there as a thinker and chooser. So if we begin to really realize that we stand separate from all the events, all the choices, all the changes, then we begin to realize that's where our power lies. If I'm separate from it, I can affect it as I desire. Yes?
Theosophy states that to understand this philosophy, there's certain ideas that we have to mm-hmm. hold. One of those ideas is we're a unity. Everything that I do affects everyone else and vice versa.
How do we get there?
Well,
how do we recognize this unity?
Well, the unity is, we're talking about consciousness. So everything is conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of our vehicles for the unity. You know, electromagnetic and all those kind of things that work in the physical world have a counterpart in the thought in the spiritual world. And that unity is the basis of this ancient religion.
And that unity comes from an absolute principle about which we cannot know or say anything except it is. And we think one of the easiest ways to understand that is think about the principle of mathematics. You can't explain it, you can't describe it, but you can show it in use. You can make use of it, and you can understand its usage. We were thinking once in a grocery store, what if mathematics was determined to be secret and special, and you couldn't have it? Then you'd be totally dependent on what someone was telling you. This is what it amounts to. This is how much you owe us, and this is your correct change. You'd have no way of ever knowing or figuring anything out. In other words, if mathematics were a religion, we'd be just as confused as we are now. And yet we can use a principle. And the principle given to us by theosophy is that this principle underlies all of life. Coming forward periodically, an emanation of spirit and matter, the two are one. We are spirit, but matter is spirit, taking a lesser role, a lesser position. And another way of saying it is matter is of service to spirit. The human body, the human condition, any body should be respected and understood to be a position of spirit at work for the sake of all. Yes?
Two statements that we brought with us, we've heard many times. I think, therefore, I am. And the second one has to do with I am master of all that I survey.
All right, if we may interrupt you, because I think, therefore, I am. Probably be said better the other way. I am, therefore I think. As truly spiritual beings, we do not require a form. As spiritual beings, we do not require a form. That's like saying, I am life, and life is indestructible. We don't need the earth. We don't need our bodies. We are consciousness. But take an artist, and they have great imagination. They see these wonderful things. Maybe it's painting. Maybe it's composing music, and not give them any way to express it. No paper, no musical instrument, nothing. What happens to all of that genius that's there in potential in consciousness? Consciousness wants. The mind wants to know, and it wants something to know. As a matter of fact, that's one of the most delightful things we think about the principles of theosophy. When this earth has reached its highest level, and those thinkers that developed the right powers and could stay and experience that, when that all comes to an end, all of us come forth again at the right place, at the right level of the right consciousness. In other words, if we got to seventh grade, we show up in eighth grade. If we got to college, we show up in a higher way. All of that is for the purpose of creating the next experience, the next earth, based on what was learned and developed on this one. In other words, it never stops. It cannot stop. It is spirit moving in action. Yes?
We were wondering, what about our consciousness when this body goes asleep at night, mm-hmm. and I go dreaming? Where is my consciousness? Am I not there?
We can all ask ourselves that a lot. Am I not there? It is said that there are three stages for the thinker that we know on average. There is waking, and sometimes we don't seem to be too awake either. There is sleeping, which involves the dream state. And then there is deep sleep. And it is said that when we fall asleep, we don't know we've fallen asleep. How do we know? When we wake up, we go, oh, I slept. So when we fall asleep, we're not falling anywhere. We're changing into a different state of consciousness. We're on a plane that leads to deep sleep. And it will be colored and affected by our last thoughts, by the physical feeling we're experiencing. In other words, it's usually chaotic. And that's our fault, by the way we've used our heart and mind during the day. So if we want to clean that up, it's our responsibility. Then all souls enter the deep sleep state, which is the highest spiritual state when you're in incarnation, unless you have perfected your entire nature. Every soul. That means the lowest, most criminal person you can think of is still a soul in evolution and still entitled to that experience in the deep sleep state. The problem for that criminal, as well as for ourselves, is when we come back from that state of spiritual awareness, we go through that same dream plane, and it's colored and distorted by the language we are speaking here, which is usually selfishness and separateness. So we blank out all that we might have brought back with us. Although many, many souls will wake up in the morning for no reason feeling hopeful and better about life. And that is a natural thing from that state. Yes?
This is a little more mundane. But in the world in which we live, we often see the word spirit or spirits mm-hmm. displayed, and it's usually in reference to alcohol, to distilled alcohol. And we've always wondered, things don't just happen, mm-hmm. That's there's a reason for that.
And we wondered about that too, but we've always thought it was because maybe many people, when they take in an alcoholic beverage, are changed. If they were reserved, they're a little more outgoing. If they're unfriendly, they're a little more friendly. So there's a certain spirit awakened in them, but it isn't spiritual. And it's terrible that that name is associated that way. But we think it's like, you know, the stolen cows being spirited. The word represents an energy or an enthusiasm. Now, suppose we did that for ourselves. I don't need alcohol to do that. I can be more friendly. I can be more cooperative. I can boost myself by what I'm learning about life as a spiritual being. So no student of theosophy would touch alcohol. We think it only fair, since the subject was brought up, to tell you what theosophy teaches. But we also want to remind you, anyone that you hear on this platform speaking about theosophy is a student. If you want to really know, if you want to verify it, if you want to study it, go to the materials yourselves. You don't even have to buy them anymore. The real sources are online, and we can give you that at the book table. But in other words, there are no teachers here. There are students, that's all. The teachings are the philosophy, not the individuals. But what theosophy says about alcohol, and we think almost all students respect theosophy enough to say, okay, I can't see how this is true, but I'm going to accept it. It is that during the process of making the alcohol, the lower dregs of the personalities of those who are making that are part of the thing, the product itself. We don't understand how that works, but something in that process takes the lowest of the people who are producing it. It's not their fault, but that's what's happening. You take the alcohol in, you take that poison of someone else's system into you, and then people wonder why they have the DTs and the awful headaches and sickness, and it's a terrible thing. It's a poison. Yeah?
Well, when it comes to spirits, we've always heard fairy tales and stories of goblins, of, you know, leprechauns, of fairies, of gnomes,
mm-hmm.
You know.
You left out trolls, I'm glad.
I couldn't think of their names. But anyhow,
those are real. There's an elemental side of nature. Between plants and animals and minerals, there's elemental forms that we don't have good words for it. That's the worst thing about getting older. You probably can remember nursery rhymes, but you don't remember things you need to know. It's as though you take a group of people and they have a certain way of thinking and feeling and picturing things. So in one climate, you have, there are these little fairies that go around and change things and do things. And there definitely are things going on. And people see them that way because they expect to. And then in another culture, you have leprechauns. And in another culture, you have gnomes. These are reflections of strong thinking along a certain line. And if you want to read an interesting thing, and I think there's a big celebration going on right now, Findhorn Gardens in Scotland, which is, you know, a deva worshiping thing, which theosophy would say is misplaced, but they are looking at the elementals that are in the plant world and getting great results by their interaction with them. But we have forms here that we don't even recognize. Each one of us, we carry memories and things from from childhood, perhaps, and we are spooked by things and we don't even know it. At least in those other cultures, they were more open to what was going on and not really afraid of it. We're afraid of it in many ways. We like those things to be fairy tales. They're myths, not realities. This is your last chance.
Well, dealing with fairy tales and stories, there's stories about giants, but in particular, there's stories of giants that have an eye.
The third eye.
Third eye. Mm-hmm. And they call it the spiritual eye.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
That is a description of us at one point in our development. And it is said, and we're in the chapter on cycles right now in the ocean, it is said that those ancient forms will be returning. We are in the most dense and physical and personal and selfish time right now. In earlier races, we were large, and we had, it didn't require a physical eye on the outside. There's the pineal gland in the brain, which science can't tell us too much about, but Theosophy says is the real spiritual eye. It's just not working because we cannot perceive in that way. It's the way we are using our principles that keeps us blind in that eye. But those things are not fairy tales, they're race memories. Actually, if you were to take, and that's one of the things that the secret doctrine does for us, is take all these ancient myths and tales from one culture to another and show us that it's the same thing over and over. It's just an expression of what the soul goes through in evolution. Yes?
If one goes into any bookstore these days, mm-hmm. it would be easy to understand why many people think that developing certain psychic powers or prophecy or going into astrology or the powers of gems and so forth, all that is spirituality. Sometimes bookstores, it's even called spirituality.
Yes.
So why aren't these things...
That is such an excellent point. We didn't even think of that throughout all of this, but you're right, in our culture, it's like anything that's not physical must be spiritual. Therefore, I can go for this, that, or the other. It's so sad that we think that we have to go out and buy something to make us what we already are. We are spiritual beings. What we need is to put forth the effort to uncover that wisdom within ourselves and begin to use it. The problem with what's being sold to people, whether it's psychism or willpower, whatever it is that it gets in the way of the actual reality of spiritual growth. Because, as was brought out earlier, we are one. If you are going to pursue something that encourages you to be even more separate, more self-serving, in that I am uniquely going to develop myself and I will be able to, some of these things say, have will over other people, these are the exact opposite of spiritual powers. Real spiritual powers are love, gentleness, honesty, kindness in the face of cruelty. I mean, you can't beat looking at the virtues as expressed by the Buddha. Return love for hate. Be kind to all life. Harm nothing. These are the things we need, and we don't need to go get any books about it. We do need to share with each other and make an effort to understand our own nature. It's not easy.
Before, on the question on spiritual, what is a spiritual being? Finally answered. I think sometimes there's the idea that a spiritual being is a good being. Because we say we want to become more aware that we're spiritual
right.
beings. It's something desirable. But a spiritual being, in that sense, if all beings in the sense are spiritual,
mm-hmm.
it's neutral. It depends how you use
exactly.
the power of spiritual.
Right.
Spiritual power. So the most evil person we can imagine in that sense is using the power of spirit
mm-hmm.
in very destructive ways.
That's the whole problem. Is that we are beings of power. And as beings of power, we keep fashioning the world that we live in. And then we want to scream and complain and look for some solution in the bookstore or somewhere else for who's going to fix it. Well, the only one who can fix it is the one who made it. You have to use your own powers to undo and clean up your own confusion. Yes, that's all there is spirit. We don't see it, but we know spirit is consciousness. Everywhere you see consciousness. Some might deny it to the mineral kingdom. That couldn't be conscious. Science says, oh no, there's consciousness there. There is choosing. You put a mineral in the bath of something, and it will only pick and select what it needs, what suits it. And then there's that wonderful experiment that confounds anyone who's ever tried to tile a room. Have any of you ever tried it, where you measure out everything because this is going to make it just exact? Well, if you spill soap in the center of a room, and it, there's enough space for it to fill, it will make perfect, what's the one, eight? Is that that gognal. And it will do it perfectly, all the way, starting in the center. Imagine tiling a room, starting in the center and going out. Because it's intelligent. It's conscious. It's not conscious as we know it. Although we have that in our bodies, don't we? Did you ever wonder, when you take a pill, how does the pill know where to go? You know, I'm taking this because I have a headache. How does the pill know that? There is consciousness in the body, intelligence at work. And frankly, it's probably smarter than most of us. But we could get there because that's why we're here. It is said that the greatest souls we can imagine, and they're called initiates, mahatmas, perfected beings, are exactly as we are. They are soul, but the greatness lies in what they have learned, how they are in charge of their instruments, their awareness, and their purpose to serve humanity itself, which they recognize is themselves. So the perfected being is no different from the lowest, meanest human being we can imagine. They have the same powers and potentials. It is only in the human where you have that power of choice and thinking that can lead to the one or the other. And it is the tragedy. At the same time, it is the beauty. You know the mysterious statement in the Bible, there is more rejoicing in heaven over the return of one sinner than 10 just men. That doesn't make any sense if you think about it, except if you take it in terms of a sinner who is turned around and going the other way knows what not to do, knows the wrong choices. They're not being good out of weakness. They're being good out of wisdom. I don't want the result I got. I'm not going to do that again. That's power manifesting itself. Yes.
Well, it seems that the problem with ourselves is that we hear these terms, say, oh, that's what spirit is. Oh, that's what this is and that is. And we go about our business. We don't do any inner research.
Okay, let me interrupt you again because we think that's a vital point. What happens to the individual who considers these ideas, carries them around, and then puts them aside? Oh, spirit wants consciousness to grow. Such an individual is making a serious mistake if they think they can get away with tasting knowledge and then ignoring it, because it will provoke you. It will invoke you. It will embarrass you. You are suddenly in a situation and you're behaving as you normally would, and you go, wait a minute, spirit, unity, oneness, no, this is not good. You can't stop yourself, but you observe yourself behaving like this. You will never be the same, ever, because you stood for that moment as the perceiver. And as the perceiver, you will start seeing more and more and more. And equally with that comes opportunities. Books will come to you, new friends, or you come to a meeting like this and you hear an idea that provokes you to take up some sort of study, to begin to look at yourself, your own nature, in relation to these huge ideas. That's a very important point, yes.
Well, it's stated in the philosophy that the universe, us included, evolved.
Oh, you have to include us.
Evolved from within outward.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you saying, that if we live our life with these ideas, or even when we come to it for the first time, and we begin and we study, doesn't change happen naturally once our mind is freed from the shackles of the ideas that exist in the world in which we live?
All right, that's a very good idea. First of all, though, you can't say that I say. What I say is totally worthless. What theosophy says, what wisdom says, and what we can then trace and compare. When we pick up these ideas, if we pick them up in a very casual, sort of interesting, intellectual way, it will have an effect on our vocabulary. You know, maybe we'll talk about things we wouldn't have talked about before, but that is not enough. What has to happen, and it usually happens because we've suffered in some way. We've suffered from the results of our own behavior, or we've suffered from the loss of someone or something. It's usually when people are suffering, they'll stop and say, why? What is going on? What can I do? And it is when you get to that point, you begin to look at yourself. I am a center of consciousness. And I have created the universe that is now attacking me. I have to fix it. So until that position is taken, you're just taking in information. From that point on, wisdom can help to heal you. Yes?
Go back to one of the initial intriguing statements, that matter is spirit, all laws are spirit. I think a very good example or way to understand how matter is spiritual in essence is that every substance is not fixed in that sense, in its reaction. It's dual in its potential. It can be a poison in one situation, like alcohol, but even alcohol in another situation is a savior.
Or like snake venom.
It depends on the circumstance, the environment, how it will react. It's dynamic. So matter, in that sense, is just a shadow or expression of the spirit.
Oh, that's beautiful. Matter, of course, is dynamic and dual, just as man's consciousness is. I mean, we certainly know that from everything that is produced by humans. It can be used to help and heal, or it can be used to harm and destroy. It is our choice, it is not matter's choice, but the dynamic, the potential is there. We think one of the easiest ways to understand this is to run a little test with yourself. Theosophy says, I am a perceiver. I am observing life through this personality. Well, why don't I just act that way? Why don't I become this scientist for a week and I'll observe how I behave, how I respond, what I'm thinking and why. And then at the end of that week, looking at it, what I don't like, I'll pick one thing and I'll go, okay, I'm going to fix this if I can. At the end of that week, we know that not only did we fix whatever that was, or at least alter it to some degree, it affects every single thing about us. It is like if you have a pebble in your shoe, everything hurts. But that's silly. It's just a little pebble in your shoe. But until you take that pebble out of your shoe, you aren't doing anything as you would be doing it. This is like that. And once you do one thing, you can't wait to do the next thing. But it may take time because nothing in nature moves overnight. It takes time to grow. Yes?
The ability to reflect on life, on your day, or on anything, is that a spiritual power in the sense that it certainly is physical? It's really, we're just looking at ourselves outside of ourselves. Is that true, or are we just being confused?
No, you're not confused. I mean, what you've described, the ability to reflect, that is what life is, a reflection of spirit. That is what matter is, the reflector. What's confusing is that we assume that what we see outside of ourselves, here we are, we're all separate forms, therefore we're separate. That is incorrect. That's as incorrect as spirit is soul. No, it isn't. Spirit is consciousness. Soul is the user of spirit. The separateness that we see in front of us is so that we can gain experience. The reality is, if we could see on inner planes and perfect your nature and you begin to see that unity, is that we all are identical. Not in circumstances, not in choices, not in expressed powers, but identical in potential. You know, it is said, be very respectful to the people you meet, because for all you know, the person that you're dealing with at the moment that seems inferior to you may be a heartbeat away from real enlightenment. Don't judge anyone by their appearance. Our time is just about up, and we would remind you that devotional books, we need the intellect, we need words, that is absolutely true, but words and the intellect just stay there. To take them in, you need the heart. You need the feeling nature. And that's the devotional books. Voice of the Silence, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Bhagavad Gita notes. The Light on the Path, Echoes from the Orient. Whatever book appeals to you, maybe something from your own childhood religions, whatever it is, turn to it daily. Even if you only read a couple of words, it's to give you a little bit of wisdom to carry with you. And we remind you that you can get the true theosophical teachings online. We can tell you at the book table how to do that. But it doesn't hurt at our prices. Our materials are priced at shipping and production. There's no profit in the selling of these books, because we all already own it. It was brought to us because the world is starving to death, and we're the potential helpers in the future if we gain some wisdom now. So we remind you our Wednesday meeting is on cycles, an important part of this subject. Meeting is adjourned.